But so today I want to talk about birth and death, which is kind of a key idea in persistence. And I want to talk about birth and death for higher dimensional mappings. And so let's start out with persistence. So you're given a function, so from a topological space to R, and well, let's pick a point A in the real line, and we'll define F sub A as the inverse of this half open interval, so negative infinity to A. All right, so the question is, so I take this space, so F inverse of this guy, which is F sub A, look at its homology group, pick a class gamma, and ask, when is it born and when does it die? And so this persistence kind of is based on this, right, birth and death. So here's our class gamma. It lives in this homology group. We'll put down some real numbers, put down some points on the real line. So we have A, B, C, D, E. Look at the inverses of these half open intervals. So here we have F A, F B, F C, F D, F E. And we have their homology groups. So we say, okay, so we look at this class gamma, ask when is it born, when does it die? We say that gamma is born, say, maybe at B, if there is nothing here in the previous group that maps to gamma, but there is something here, say alpha, that maps to gamma. So we say that gamma here is born at B. Now, when does it die? Well, it dies, say, maybe at E, if there is something back here, some class back here, that when mapped forward, maps to the same element as gamma when mapped forward. Okay, so for class gamma, we have a notion of birth, which is a real value, and death, which is a real value. Dies means, yes. Okay, so I guess I have to move this around. So we say gamma dies here if it merges with some class back here. So this is in a group right before it was born. So it was born here means that there is some class alpha that maps to gamma, but there's nothing back here that maps to gamma. And it dies here if there's something here, so before gamma was born, that maps the same element here as gamma. So that's birth and death. Right? Right, so let's ask a slightly different question. So you're given a real valued function, and you take some closed intervals, C, D, and R. You look at its inverse, pick a class gamma, and ask when is it born and when does it die? So this notion of level set zigzag persistence that answers this question. So here what they do is, well, you put down some points on the real line. You look at the inverses, so F sub A is inverse of A, F sub B is inverse of B, F sub C is inverse of C, F sub D is inverse of D, F sub E is inverse of E. And then now, this level set includes into the inverse of AB. So we define FAB as the inverse of a closed interval. So we have all these closed intervals here, inverses of all these closed intervals. And these maps are induced by inclusion. Right, so I pick some class gamma here. I ask, when is it born? Well, I say it's born in this group here if there's nothing here that maps to it. Well, what if there is something here that maps to it? Well, then it's born at least here. It could have been born somewhere back here. So then you can play this game. You can map gamma 1, which is gamma 1 is something here that maps to gamma. You can map this forward here, you get something like gamma 2, and you can keep going until you don't get an element that corresponds to gamma. So there is some notion of birth and death for this setting here, where you take any interval, closed interval CD and R, and the class gamma in this homology group. And this notion of birth and death is not arbitrary. It's not arbitrary because it's stable to perturbations of F. Right, so this is the question I want to address today is the following. Say I'm given some mapping F from a topological space to an orientable Riemannian M manifold, and I pick any open subset U. I look at the inverse of U, so it's FU. Apply some homology functors. I'll explain what this means later, but it's some homology group associated with the inverse of U. I pick a class gamma and ask, when is it born and when does it die? And of course, this can't be some arbitrary number. It has to be something that's stable to perturbations of S. Okay, now also assume F is proper. That means the inverse of a compact set is compact. Okay, so this is a question I'll address. I'll start with definitions. So for any real value R, let U sub R be the set of points in the manifold X such that its distance from X to U is at most epsilon. So then I'm talking about geodesic distance on the manifold M. So U sub R is, you take U and you just kind of grow it by some value R. Okay. Excuse me. Ah, yes, this should be R. Sorry, this should be R. So now if we have a sequence of real values like this, we get this sequence of offsets. So we start out with U, we grow it by R1. Right. So U is included in R. U is included in U1, so this is U grown by R1, which is included in R2, U2, which is included in U3. And I'm going to repeat the sequence on the other side. Okay, so now let's take F inverses of all these guys. So I have big F U3, big F U2, and so on. And we have this sequence. So FU is contained in FU1, contained in FU2, and so on. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is apply. Yep. I'm repeating it. Yes, same thing. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this first half, so up to here. I'm going to apply this homology functor, which I'll explain later. Next slide. This thing turns out to be contravariant. So I'll have this homology group of closed homology group of FU3 restricts to the closed homology group of FU2, and so on. And then I'll take the second half here and do the same thing, but this time I'm going to apply the ordinary homology functor. So this is ordinary homology, which is covariant. And then I'm going to link these two together with some map, which I'll explain also later. And I get this sequence. So I'm going this way, contravariant, and then covariant. And then, so my gamma lives here. So my gamma lives in this group here. And now I'm in the setting of persistence. I have a notion of birth and death. So birth is some real number here such that there is an element that maps to my gamma. And death is something down here, such that something from some. I'll explain that in two slides. The point is that whatever this is contravariant. Okay. So basically, I'll reduce. I have my class gamma here, and I'll reduce it to this usual persistence where birth and death is well defined. And then I'll argue that this notion of thinking about birth and death is stable to perturbations of F. Okay, closed homology. Next slide. All right. Okay, so what is this thing? So I have some open set U, I look at its inverse, and I want to define this guy. So here's how it goes. Start out with a collection of compact sets that are contained in the inverse of U, so contained in F U. Now, if this compact set Ki is containing Kj, then we have a map on relative homology induced by inclusion. So we have some map Fij that takes x rel x minus Kj to x comma x minus Ki. Now we're going to define this group, the closed homology group of Fu, as the projective or inverse limit of all these groups. Now, inverse limit is the following. This group is a collection of elements alpha, alpha is an element of the product of all these groups, such that, well, if I take alpha I, which is a single component of alpha, so alpha I is a component of this big, think of it as a huge vector, so alpha I is a component of alpha, such that alpha I equals F of ij alpha j. So I'm not looking at, I don't want this entire product, but I only want products such that their components behave nicely, that they restrict nicely to each other. Right? So I only want these alphas such that alpha sub I, which is the ith component of this thing, is equal to Fij. Where's Fij? Fij of alpha j, which is the jth component of this thing. Okay. So this is closed homology. So this thing is contravariant. So if I take any open set V of U, there is a unique morphism that takes the closed homology of, this should be F inverse of U, to the closed homology of F inverse of V. Not only that, if I take any compact set K sub I, there is this projection map that goes from the closed homology group of the F inverse of U to this guy, X rel X minus Ki. Right? This projection map just follows from the definition of the projective limit. This is just project to the ith component. Okay. Right, so now we have these maps. So we've defined these groups and we have these maps between them. By the way, if this space here is compact, then this group is exactly the ordinary homology group of that space. Okay, so now we have this guy, and I need to explain this phi map. Yep? What does it depend? Say that again? Oh, yes, because if this space is compact, then you have some K sub I that includes all the case of ice. That is one way of thinking about this, yes. So if F sub U is compact, then F sub U belongs in this collection, right? F sub U itself belongs in this collection. Okay, so now I need to define this this V map. Okay, so let's assume for now that U, this open set, is path connected. And I also assume at the beginning that M is orientable. This means that this local cohomology group, M comma M minus X, so this is, N is a dimension of M, which I probably messed up. Yes, so I want, this should be M. M is a dimension of M. So this cohomology group is isomorphic to Z, and I can pick a generator of this group, call this mu X, that is consistent with all points X and M. So basically this thing is orientable means that I can pick a generator of this group that is consistent for any choice of X. Right? So pick any point X in my open set U. And what I'll do is I'll start out with this closed homology group. So this is F inverse of U, and I'm looking at the M plus pth dimensional closed homology group of it. I'll project, okay, so our mapping F is proper. So F inverse of X is compact. So I have this projection map from the last slide that takes anything in here to this group, which is X rel X minus F inverse of that thing. Right, so this is projection map. Excuse me? No. Well, then X is the entire domain of the mapping F. Let's go back here. See, the way I defined it is I took closed homology group as inverse limit of all these guys. So this projection map gives me a map from here to this. Okay, so now I have this level set F inverse of X, and I'm just going to cut off everything. I'm going to cut out everything outside some open neighborhood of this level set of F inverse of X. So basically what I'm going to do is, so take look at this group, which is F inverse of U. So U contains X, comma F inverse of U minus this level set. Now this includes into here, this includes into here, this includes into here. So this map is induced by inclusion, but but by excision it's an isomorphism. Okay, so I can go from here now to here, and then I take this thing, which is a cap product. So the mapping F induces a map on cohomology that goes from, that takes, how does this work? That takes, that goes from something M dimensional, that's right. Okay, so we have this mapping F that takes my F inverse of U to the manifold M, and it takes F inverse of X to this point X. This gives us a map this way on cohomology, so where M is the dimension of the manifold M. Right, and here we have this special class in here, which is the generator of this homology group. Mu sub X. So take that special class, mu sub X. Move it here using F star. Right, so this is this class. and apply a cap product. Apply the cap product. So what this is doing here is you take a class in here. So it's m plus p dimensional class. You intersect it with f inverse of x, and it gives you something lower dimensional. Gives you something p dimensional. So you take a class here, you cap product it, and you get a p-dimensional ordinary homology class. Okay? So this is going to be our FV map. You go from here, apply the projection, take the inverse, apply the cap product. I'll define that as a FV map. And the nice thing about this is that I could choose any point x in my open set U. And because of the consistency of that choice of the generator, and because of the naturality of the cap product, you get the same phi. So this phi is independent of x. You could take any x in my open set U. So that'll be my phi. Okay. What happened? Let's see. Yeah. Because right, but what happens is I apply this cap product, right, and then I take some other point, say y and u. Right. Now x and y are path connected. There's a way to move the move this guy, mu x, to mu y, and the resulting thing you get. Okay, so here we have our, here's this diagram I put up for U. So we have our open set U. Look at the closed homology group of F inverse of U. And now we're growing U, right? So here's, we're growing U. Apply the phi map. We come to ordinary homology, and we're growing U. Right? We have some class gamma in here. We have this notion of birth and death that comes from persistence. And now let's say I take another open set V that's contained in U. And I'll assume also V is path connected. So then this gives me another sequence of groups. So I have this. So I have V here, so F inverse of V. F inverse of V1. So I'm growing V by the same amount that as I grew U. So I have these groups here. Right, and the same thing down here. I have this phi map here, and then I have ordinary homology on V as I grow V. So you have this class gamma is a notion of birth and death. Now, what if I restrict gamma to this group here? How does the let's call the restriction of gamma to this group gamma prime? How does the birth and death of gamma prime relate to the birth and death of gamma? Well, let's say the birth of gamma is b, so that means at some value b, maybe it's this R3, gamma is born. So that means there's a class in here that maps to gamma, but there's nothing from a previous group, say here, that maps to gamma. So let's say it's born here. Then gamma prime, I need to say something. These phi maps, they all commute. So all of these guys commute by inclusion. This square here also commutes. So you can show that this thing commutes by the naturality of the cap product. So we have this gamma prime here. When was it born? Well, if we know that gamma was born here, that means, well, if that means there's some element here that maps to gamma. So just push this, restrict this element down to here. So that means gamma prime was born at least at the value b. So the birth of gamma prime is at least b. Right? Now death. Let's say gamma died. Let's say gamma dies at d. So maybe it dies at, let's just say d is this value r2. So that means as I move gamma down here, apply the phi map, move it here, it dies. What does it mean to die? Well, there's some class up over here to the left of this group where it was born. That when mapped to this group, maps the same element as gamma. Right, so that means this element here that was out here in this group off the board, if I restrict it to this group down here, then that group will also kill, that group will kill gamma prime just by commutativity. So that we know that the death of gamma prime is at least d. But we can say something more. So we have our open set U, and we have our open set V that's contained in U. Now if I grow V enough, it will swallow U. So let epsilon be the value you have to grow V by, so it swallows U. So the infimum of all values R greater than zero, such that V grown by R contains U. So let epsilon be the amount you have to grow V so that it contains U. Well, if that's true, then I have a map this way. I have a map from the inverse of V grown by epsilon to the closed homology group of F inverse of U. So this should be F inverse. Right? So if I grow my V by enough, I have this map that goes from F inverse of the offset of V by epsilon to F inverse of U. So this means if I go here, if I go back far enough, I have a map from some group here up and to the right to some group here. What this means is that we can now upper bound the birth of this restriction. So the birth of gamma prime is at most the birth of gamma plus this epsilon. Right? And then for death, we have a map the other way. We have a map that goes from the p-dimensional homology group of F inverse of U to the p-dimensional homology group of the F inverse of the offset of V. Right? And this allows, so this means that if I go far enough here, there is a map that goes up and to the right. So this gives an upper bound on the depth of this restriction gamma prime. So it's at most the death value of gamma plus this epsilon. Right? So this notion of birth and death restricts nicely. So that was the point of this. Okay, so the next thing I want to say is something about stability. So now let's say I have my mapping F and I perturb it. I take a homotopic perturbation of F and have the same setup. Right, so let's say we have some homotopy from x cos 0, 1 to m that connects two mappings, F to G. And I need this notion of a homotopy speed. Homotopy speed of H is this delta, which is the infimum over all values epsilon, such that the geodesic distance between F of x and HT of x is at most epsilon T. So what this is saying is that if I have my point f of x, and I let the homotopy do its thing for some time t, it gives me h sub t of x, and that point must be contained in an offset of h of x. So an offset of h of x, sorry, f of x, by the offset is at most delta t. So delta t. So this simply means that this homotopy doesn't move my point x too quickly with respect to time. Okay, so now say I have some open set V that's contained in U, such that, well, let's see. Ah, so say I have some open set V that's contained in U, such that, excuse me. So this delta is controlling how fast this homotopy is moving the images of the point x. And I'll show why I need it. So now let's take some open set V that's in U, and I need this condition that if I grow V by delta, it's contained in U. Then I have my same sequence as before. I have my F inverse of U, and I grow it by some amount R1, grow it by some amount R2, grow it by some amount R3. And then down here, I'll take my V, and I'll look at G inverse of V, grow V by some amount R1, grow V by some amount R2, and R3. And now these maps follow by inclusion. So given this condition, this space here is included in this space here, and we get these maps down that's induced by inclusion. Okay, and then now we have these phi maps. We have this phi map here as I defined earlier, and we also have this phi map here between these two groups. Now, these phi maps involve this cap product, and this diagram commutes because we have a homotopy. This homotopy is absolutely necessary for this diagram to commute. Okay, so we ask the same question now. We have some class gamma in here. We have a notion of birth and death. We restrict it to gamma prime, which lives in this group, right? It's for a different mapping G. And we have all these maps in between. Now I'll let okay, so V is contained in U. So that means if I grow V by some amount epsilon, V epsilon contains U. So this is that same epsilon here. So by the same method I used earlier, the last slide, you can show that, well, I can show that the birth of gamma prime is related to the birth of gamma in the following way. The birth of gamma prime is at most the birth of gamma plus this delta. This delta is a homotopy speed. Plus this epsilon, the amount I have to grow V so it contains U. And it's at least the birth of gamma. And the same thing with delta. I can control the values for which gamma prime dies. So the death of gamma prime is at most the death of gamma plus this delta and this epsilon that I have to go by. And it is at least the death of gamma. Right. So this notion of birth and death is stable to perturbations of F. Homotopic perturbations of F. Okay. So I just want to show a way of extending this classic notion of birth and death to higher dimensional settings, where to this mappings of this form, topological space to an orientable Riemannian manifold, and for each open set U. In each class in this inverse of U, there's a notion of birth and death, and this thing is consistent with restrictions. So for any open set U and V, you take gamma in here, map it here, the birth and death of this guy is related to the birth and death of this guy. And that relation is dependent on how much you have to grow V so it contains U. And this notion of birth and death is stable to homotopic perturbations. And the relation between, stable to homotopic perturbations where the homotopy speed has to be controlled. Okay. Any questions?